Hi there, and welcome to Polyamory Uncensored, a podcast where we, your hosts, Lindsay Miller
and Katie Williams,
interview a poly person each episode, and we try to answer the five things of journalism. Who, what, when, where, and why, as it pertains to our poly lives.
Welcome to episode 60, where we're talking with Ellis. Stay tuned as we talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the just plain complicated truths about our poly lives.
Hello, Ellis. So who are you and how do you identify?
Hi, my name is Ellis. I'm a non-binary queer individual. I'm 25 years old. I'm currently studying women's gender and sexuality studies at The Ohio State University.
Very cool. So what does polyamory mean to you?
So polyamory to me is a practice of ethical non-monogamy where all partners involved are honest and communicative and consenting to being in a polyamorous relationship. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I didn't understand or know of the term polyamory until much later in my open relationship journey. I just thought that I had, you know, commitment issues or just didn't really want, I never really pictured myself in a monogamous relationship. Even when I was younger, I just never wanted to like be with just one person. And I thought that there was something wrong with me. I thought there was like a, you know, commitment issue or, you know, related to mental health, just like a flaw within myself. And then when I started, you know, internet searching and meeting fellow queer people, I was like, wow, there's actually like a community that you can find that people practice ethical non-monogamy and it's a safe and secure place to be. And that's okay. So, yeah.
Wow.
So what drew you to polyamory?
To be honest, like the relationship I'm in now is probably the first poly relationship that I'm in that I feel is like a healthy and communicative and honest ethical non-monogamous relationship. And I think it started when I met my partner that I'm dating now, and he and I were dating monogamously long distance for a while. And when I moved across the country to be with him, I realized that I had left a whole part of my heart in Los Angeles, where I'm from, and that was a person that I was in love with as well, and that I really didn't want to just be with him. I really wanted to open up our relationship and like figure out a way to navigate loving two people and being okay with that and not having the guilt that comes with, oh my God, am I betraying my boyfriend for loving this person who's across the country? And I didn't fully realize that I was in love with her until I actually like moved and I was like, wow, like I spent so much time with this person and I'm not with her. And we were dating on and off for a long time. And like when I met my boyfriend, we were just friends and platonic, and we navigated that situation, which was really complicated. And then once I moved across the country, I was like, wow, okay, I really need to like sit down with my feelings and really analyze like, what does it mean to be poly and what does it mean to be open? Because I don't want to be monogamous right now. And I think that that's like how it really got started was, okay, I love two people at the same time equally.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That definitely covers our next question. Well, maybe not. So is that when you first knew you were poly or when did you first know you were poly?
I think that was when the first time I accepted I was poly, because I had like little inklings along with like my previous relationships that have been open that I was maybe poly, but I, again, like had a lot of guilt that came with it and was like maybe thinking that it was like a commitment thing or relating to like abandonment issues, that I was just scared and I was afraid. So to really just accept that like being a poly person is okay without knowing a lot, I don't know that many poly people. So like just really doing a lot of research and reading and on poly relationships and like accepting that like, oh wow, this is something that I am and like that is okay. I think it was around, you know, six to 10 months ago that I accepted it, but like I have been open and poly my whole life. I think like since I started dating at the age of 17, and now I'm 25, and now I've like fully accepted that like this is how my future will look. And I need to like really read up on it and like, you know, branch out my relationships and my connections into other poly, like, you know, meeting other poly people so that I can really see how it looks for my future.
Is there anything you find particularly difficult about polyamory?
Yeah, it's interesting because I also have borderline personality disorder. And I think that when I got diagnosed with that, I think I was the age of 19 or 20. And a lot of the things that I was reading online about BPD was like abandonment issues or, you know, unstable relationships. And I think that that really put like a stigma in my head when I, you know, discovered that I was polyamorous and like really accepted that. I was like, wow, maybe it's just something that I was resistant to accepting that I was poly because I thought maybe this is just like a characterization of BPD, like I'm unstable and I can't commit. So it really is like a thin line between like being borderline and having unstable relationships, which is something that, you know, can happen if you don't work on your symptoms and your borderline tendencies, and also being poly and like being ethically non-monogamous and like creating, you know, open communication and honesty and like really like observing your emotions and describing them to your partner. So to answer your question, like, yes, there's a lot of guilt and shame that comes up when I talk about being poly because I am scared of judgment and I'm fear of rejection from family members and friends. But I think that it ties into having BPD and like have been doing the work in therapy of, you know, how to combat those negative emotions when it comes to guilt and shame and fear and anger. So I think that I've been putting in a lot of work to work on my emotions. So when I think about the negative, you know, things that come into my head when I think about being poly, I just do the skills that I have with my mental health. And I really work on that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when, if ever, did you feel different from other people?
I think I've always felt different from other people. That's a good question because I did grow up in a really religious Orthodox Hasidic community, and just being born naturally as an artist and a creative person, and I've always been questioning things outside of the bubble that I grew up in. And I think that I've always felt different. I mean, even in high school, with dealing with my mental health in the Orthodox Jewish school system, there wasn't mental health, professionals coming in and talking to us about, you know, what it means to have depression, what it means to, you know, deal with someone who has depression. There was no discussion around that. So I always felt different in regards to like being in a really repressed and like, I guess, closed community, and then coming out of that and like turning 18, 19, graduating high school and becoming into my queer identity, that has also played into like how I felt different. I feel different from the people back in my community in Los Angeles, and I think that that's okay, and I've accepted that, and I've always enjoyed being different. I never looked at it as something that's bad. I always enjoyed being a different person, you know, having tattoos, having blue hair, you know. I don't look like your typical Orthodox Jewish girl, quote unquote. But I like that. I like being different, and I like being an artist, and I like being creative, and I like being queer, and, you know, being, you know, myself. So.
Mm-hmm. So where are you on your poly journey?
It's interesting because I'm just learning more and more every single day about being poly. But at the same time, I know that this is where I'm supposed to be and this is where I want to be. And like, this is how I envision my future as well. So although I'm like still beginning my journey, I'm also like really excited about my future because I know that this is how I want it to play out. Like I have a vision, like I have two partners. One is in Los Angeles and it's long distance. And then I have one partner that I live with in Columbus. And I am so happy with where I'm at with both of them in my life, and just us being, you know, together and them loving me and me being able to love both of them freely without judgment. Like, I think that I'm really happy with where I'm at, and I am excited for my future. My partner back in Los Angeles is looking into potentially moving to Columbus so that we could be closer. And I think that, you know, my future looks really bright with having Georgie, my girlfriend, in LA, and having Thomas, my boyfriend, in Columbus, being in the same city, and us being able to navigate, like, having a family. And if when a marriage, if, you know, one of us were to do that, like, I just think that it's exciting. And, you know, every day I'm learning, like, so many new things. So it's great.
So do you where do you hope to go on your poly journey? Do you have poly goals? It sounds like you kind of do.
Yeah. I mean, I really do hope to get married one day. Like, I'm 25. I turned 25 yesterday, actually. So it's weird to say that. I am now 25.
And happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I want to get married one day. I know that it's, like, really, I guess, weird to be polyamorous and then be living in the United States, where being married to multiple people is probably not, I don't even know if that's legal in any state right now. But I think that a goal of mine is to really just settle down with one partner or both of my partners and see where that goes. And if marriage with one of them works out and then, you know, the other partner is okay with that, that'll be great. I've talked marriage with both of my partners. So, I mean, I'm really just, I have a lot of discussions that need to be held with Georgie and with Thomas, but I think that they're both, like, really comfortable with, you know, those discussions being held. And I think that that's important, because I think that just being open and honest and, like, really just communicating your feelings on, like, how do I want to, you know, how does Georgie want her future to look like? How does Thomas want his to look like? And what do I want for myself? Like, we all have those discussions and we're continuously, like, you know, evolving together. So, I mean, right now we'll see, but I think that it's definitely something that we discuss.
So why do you think you are poly?
That's such a good question. why do I think I'm poly? I think I just naturally have, like, a really big fucking heart. Like, I love so many people, and I'm a very social person, and I'm a very genuinely, like, nice person. And I think that that's, like, a lot of good traits that, like, those are my good traits. And I think that being poly is just natural for me. Like, I think loving people freely and not having anything to hold back is something that I need in my life. I think that if someone were to come to me and be like, you need to be monogamous, like, this is how you have to live your life, like, I'd be like, no fucking way. Like, I don't think I could ever do that. I just think that I enjoy going on dates. I enjoy having dating apps. I enjoy flirting with people. And I think that just being able to do that without feeling any guilt, like, I'm cheating on my partner, or I'm doing something that I shouldn't do. Like, just being able to freely love and freely, you know, compliment people without feeling the guilt of, am I crossing a boundary that my partner would, you know, be upset about? Like, just being able to be an independent person and also love people is just something that I enjoy and I really love.
So why did you agree to be interviewed?
I've been listening to your guys' podcast for, I think, a few months now. My girlfriend actually showed it to me, and she was like, hey, I found this really cool podcast called Polyamory Uncensored. Let's listen to it when you come to LA. Like, together, we'll listen to an episode in the car. And we were listening to it, and she turns to me and she's like, you know, you could easily be, like, on this podcast, like telling me that I should be the, because I've always said, like, I would love to talk about my life on a podcast, and just, I have so many interesting things about, you know, growing up in an Orthodox Jewish community and becoming into my queer, you know, non-binary self, and just being poly, and there's so many things that I could talk about. And I've always wanted to be on a podcast. And I think that, like, one day I was just listening to your podcast, like, I was at work, And it was like one of your episodes. I forget the name of the person being interviewed, but I was listening to one of your episodes and I just pulled out my email and I just was like, I'm gonna find their email and just send an email. And just if they don't respond, that's fine. But like, hopefully I'm putting myself out there, like I'm opening up a door. So I emailed you guys and I think that sharing my life about my, you know, my poly life is important for whoever's listening. Just, you know, hopefully a family member of mine or a friend of mine who is not super educated on what poly is can listen and be like, wow, they sound really fucking happy with their life. And like, why don't I support them? Like, maybe I should support them a little more. Maybe I should like learn more about other types of relationships, you know? So thank you for giving me this opportunity.
I think there's so much power in sharing our stories and really in trying to let people see the diversity of the ways that poly lives can work and how satisfying they are for people. Like, yes, there's sometimes fear about being out or there's, you know, different issues and challenges that people have, but being able to really just authentically share our stories, I think it makes a difference.
100%. I feel empowered being able to talk about it. And also I'm learning a lot about myself, things that I don't even think about, but like just by speaking and like you guys asking me questions, I think I'm learning a lot too. So that's really cool.
That's fantastic.
Awesome. All right. Well, we will take a quick break and then we'll come back to talk about our topic. Polyamory Uncensored is excited to announce a brand new product. We have designed a planner and journal specifically geared for polyamorous individuals. If you're a fan of the podcast, you know that I love recommending journaling to our guests and audience members. After about the 50th time or so I caught myself suggesting it, I thought to myself, there should be a journal specifically designed for us polyamorous folks. One that includes a planner, because of course we be planning, and one that prompts us to go deep into our poly lives. You know, the good, the bad, the ugly, the just plain complicated truths. And I wanted to put together a space where you could go if you needed to vent out all of those really hard poly drama feelings. So I designed the Polyamory Uncensored Planner and Journal. This little book includes a full year planner for the year 2021, as well as self-discovery pages, guided journal with polyamory themed prompts, and resource guide pages so that you can keep track of the books and podcasts and websites that you find helpful in your poly journey. Get yours today for yourself or the thoughtful polyamorist in your life at tinyurl.com/poly2021. That's tinyurl.com/poly2021. In doing so, you support me and this podcast. Thank you so much. I love you. Bye. And we are back. And we are speaking to Ellis today about growing up in a Orthodox Hasidic Jewish community and coming into who they are today. So just as a background for our listeners who might not know, what does it look like? Or what did it for you look like growing up in an Orthodox community?
So I actually had a really interesting upbringing in Hollywood inside an Orthodox Jewish community. So it's not the typical Hasidic community that you'd imagine that's like really secluded, either like in Israel or wherever, you know, you'd picture a Jewish community, because I was literally born and raised on Sunset Boulevard within this community. So boys and girls are separate. It's very segregated. There's a lot of restrictions on things that you can and can't eat, what you can and can't wear, who you can and can't marry or socialize with. So growing up, I was told a lot of things. There was a lot of rules. And, you know, from the second I was born, the traditions and the culture comes with, you know, what blessings to say on this, and, you know, what blessing to say before you drink a cup of water, what blessing to say before you wash your hands. There's like, you know, God is constantly intertwined with everything that you do. Orthodox Jewish people believe is that, I guess, the commandments that are in the Bible have to, you know, they practice it as if we're still living in biblical times. So, you know, on Saturdays, they don't drive, they don't use their cell phones, they don't use technology, they don't do anything that would potentially break the holy day of rest or the day of God's day of rest. So yeah, I grew up like that until I was about 17 or 18 years old, where I went to an all-girls school for preschool, elementary school, high school, middle school, all of that. So really segregated, never had any friends that were boys, didn't even know what a queer community was until I was about 20. So that's 5 years ago.
Wow.
Got it. Yeah. You know, I knew what gay was maybe when I was like 19 years old, 18 years old. Like I found out that there were people that, you know, were gay. I didn't know. I obviously didn't know anybody that was gay. I didn't even know if that was allowed. I assumed it wasn't allowed in my community.
Did you have much exposure to people outside of your community?
No. My first real exposure to people outside of my community was when I was in, I think, 10th or 11th grade. I had to attend this mandatory group therapy because I was having like severe mental health issues, and they didn't really know how to deal with me inside my high school. So they were like, okay, well, you have to go to this group therapy. And like the only group therapy that was in Los Angeles was like, you know, in Beverly Hills, that they let me go to was like an all girls group therapy, but they weren't all Jews. So it was like, you know, a bunch of other types of people. That was my first real exposure to like people not in my community, meeting other girls who had depression, which is like interesting because they were all so fucking cool and so fucking nice. And like, you think about it, like I didn't even know like any real like people of color other than like, you know, maybe like a few other people that I had come across, but not in like my high school. Like we were all white Jews, like predominantly upper class, like religious Jews. So it was really nice. It was my favorite part of the week, was going to group therapy and hang out with my non-Jewish friends.
Did you not have a lot of exposure to like media, movies, TV?
No, I really didn't. Like even now, like my partner will say references of like certain movies or music, and I'm like, oh, wait, remind me like which artist like sometimes I like have to, I've done a lot of research. Like to be fair, like I did listen to a lot of music without my high school knowing, and like I did go to movies because my parents allowed that, but like I still like missed out on a lot of stuff in my childhood. So I have done a lot of research, and I'm now like very musical and like know, you know, classic references, but still I'll forget, and I'll be like, oh, like you have to remind me, like, you know, the last name of this Beatles, or, you know. Yeah. So yeah, I did miss out on a lot, but I think that compared to other people in the community, I did have more of a modern upbringing because my parents weren't as strict. They did let me go to concerts in high school, which wasn't necessarily allowed. I was allowed to go to, you know, mixed events with boys and girls outside of high school. My principal of my high school actually was like very, very upset when she found out that my parents were letting me do this. I almost got suspended because I went to like a retreat one weekend and there were boys, and my mom was okay with it, but my principal like of my high school found out. And she like was really upset and called like a meeting. So yeah, it was very strict.
Yeah. Wow.
Does your family, are you out to your family either about being queer or about being poly?
So I'm out to everybody in my life about being queer because I'm very open about it on my social media, like on my Instagram and Facebook. I've come out as pansexual. I've come out as non-binary and queer and trans and all of that. But being poly is something that I'm slowly coming out to my family still about. Like my mom knows, and she's actually very supportive because she loves both of my partners like very much. So she's like been super supportive, and I've had to teach her a lot about like what certain terms mean. But to my dad and some of my siblings, I'm not super open about being poly. They're aware that I have these people in my life who I'm super close to and who I love, but I don't think they understand that like I'm dating both of them at the same time. I think that this podcast, like sending them this podcast to listen to, would be like a really cool way to come out to like certain people who I want to share this with, but they're not super aware of what it means.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, the way I came out to my mom was I wrote and published an article in a college newspaper, and it was about being polyamorous. And then I was like, hey, mom, could you read this article? I wrote it. And she was like, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Her response, though, which I repeat all the time because I love it so much. She said, oh, your father and I were kind of doing that once upon a time, but we were lying the whole time. And I was like, that's the opposite, mom. That's cheating. Yeah. Like, that's like, funny. Yeah.
I've definitely come out as like non-binary to my dad, like through writing. I had to write an essay for one of my gender studies class, and it was all about like my intersectional identity, being Jewish and being trans non-binary. And I sent it to him and I was like, hey, like if you ever want to read this, like I wrote this for my class. I don't think he ever read it because I never got a response. So that was really unfortunate. But I mean, I'm out on my Instagram and my parents both follow me. So it's like, you know, if they, you know, my mom is supportive and respects my pronouns and respects my gender identity. My dad, on the other hand, like, isn't necessarily the most supportive. I don't think he will ever understand, to be honest. But to be fair, like, he did grow up in a very sheltered place. And I think it's really hard for him to come around. And that's, you know, something that I've had to accept.
Sure. I actually was wondering, like, you were saying that the community is very binary, very hetero. Like, how does a community like that even grasp the concept of non-binary? Or do they? Or do they not really acknowledge it?
They don't. Like, it's really, like, a joke, I think, to some people. Like, unfortunately, like, a lot of people that I've come across that I've known for so long, like they really don't understand it. And they'll make jokes about like gender identities being like, you know, there's so many of them. Like, I don't understand, like what, like I'll identify as a giraffe. Like, you know, like just funny, like make a joke out of it. And it's like, oh, that's not really funny. You know, like stop that. I think that there is hope because, you know, my mom grew up, you know, one of 11, siblings and grew up Orthodox Jewish, raised us Orthodox Jewish, and she is the most supportive number one fan of mine right now. So it's like, you know, there's hope because if she can come around and if I can slowly educate her, and like every time we talk on the phone, she has another question like, oh, I met this trans individual, like I'm curious about what it means to transition, like can you explain hormones to me, like all of these things. I'm just like, yes, mom, like you're coming to me with questions. I'm sending you podcasts to listen to. I recommend books to you and you do the work. Like there is hope because if she can do it, anybody can do it, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
She can really be a person inside that community who can serve as a resource for other people. If she's talking about what she's learning, you know, even if it's not clear and obvious and you don't see change in a short-term sense, like it's the ripple effect is still there.
100%. And I think it's so interesting because like if my little siblings see her referring to me as they, them, and as my name that I prefer, they're going to start doing it too. And, you know, they have been like my sisters who are 16 and or 17 and 21, they both have been, you know, changing the way that they refer to me because they see that like, this is what people in my life are doing. And this is how you validate me. And this is how I want to be respected. This is who I am. And I think that, you know, it is a ripple effect because they see my mom doing it. They see, you know, my partners doing it and my best friends doing it. And they're like, oh yeah, this isn't like a joke. This isn't just a phase. Like this is who they are. So.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And are your siblings following more traditional paths or are they doing their own thing too?
I think they're both religious. Well, the ones that I was talking about, my two sisters who I'm closest to, they're both religious, but they're more modern in a sense where they're not as strict with their traditions as I was when I was their age. They're definitely more open, but they do still practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you say that you're still religious?
I don't say I'm religious. I do say I'm very spiritual because I think that I have always had a sense of there is something greater than me in the world. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a God or if it's just a higher power. If it's something within me, I don't know. I'll never know because there's no way to find out. But I think that I am spiritual in a sense where I do a lot of mindfulness exercises and I do a lot of meditation. And I think that just like mantras and prayers are so important to me in like my growth with like, you know, trauma that I've been through and PTSD that I've endured, like just doing a lot of self-reflection has tied into my spirituality. And, you know, I will still do some traditions that are Jewish things that I don't necessarily do them because I feel like it's an obligation, but I do them because I want to and because it brings me closer to myself and it brings me closer to me and who I was as a child and my family. So I wouldn't say religious, but I'm definitely spiritual.
Yeah, I can feel that. I mean, like, I don't identify as a Christian, though my family identified as Christian and Catholic. But I still celebrate Christmas, you know, like there are certain traditions that like, I like the sentiment behind them and I can appreciate giving gifts because I love doing that. But it's not, you know, the Christian ideas behind Christmas aren't what I'm celebrating. I'm celebrating family and friends and loved ones, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I'm on the same boat. Yeah.
So was leaving the community challenging or was it mostly that you like left because you left the physical location or like what did that look like?
It was challenging. I think that it was easier to leave the community when I actually moved physically. But I also stayed for a long time. Like I was in LA where I grew up and where I was raised and not practicing and living under my dad's roof for, you know, maybe 5 to 6 years. So I definitely like had a lot of challenges just with being around my family and the community that is, you know, very, very religious and me, you know, doing these things that are just in line with who I am and what I believe in. So yeah, it was extremely challenging, but I think that it really helped me to put things in perspective because it made me feel like this is challenging, but I'm doing something that I really believe in. Like I didn't think about it twice. Like I never thought like, is this the right thing to do? I always just fucking did it. And, you know, despite how annoying or hard it was, I was like, it doesn't really matter because like, this is ultimately like who I want to be. And like, I'd never let anybody tell me, you know, who I could or couldn't be. Like, you know, after high school, I was like, this is it. Like I'm graduating. I remember the night of graduation, I dyed my hair pink because I was never allowed to do that. I like got home from my graduation, dyed my hair pink and, you know, decided to get a tattoo the next month. I was like, this is my final form. Like, this is who I am. This is who I wanted to be. I just couldn't express that because I was like, you know, so repressed in high school.
Well, and I imagine actually like being your true self would have gotten you suspended, right? Or kicked out of school.
I couldn't even color my nails with nail polish that was not pink. Like I couldn't have black nail polish, like which I wanted to at that time so bad, like just like paint my nails black. And you know, that it's just funny to look back because it's like if only that was my struggle now. I mean, I actually got suspended a couple times. Like the first time was because my principal of the school found out that I was dating a boy in the boys' school. And, you know, this was okay with my mom. This was okay with my dad. Like they knew about him. They actually let him come over. But the headmaster of the school found out that I was like having a relationship with the boy. And like rumors went around the school that I was having sex with him, which is like so frowned upon, which like wasn't even true at the time. Cause like I was a virgin, like up until after high school. So it was like, these rumors were going around and I was like, what are you like, what is what is so wrong about like holding hands or kissing my boyfriend? Like, to me, that was so silly, but like at the time it was so huge. Like, it was just like, so, it was made so big in my head that like, this was so bad. And I think that there's like a real issue in that community where it's like, you know, these normal, natural things that people and as human beings, like you want to do or you need to do. And it's just like frowned upon because you're a religious Jew. And I think that, you know, I'm studying gender studies right now. And like, what I aim to do is like eventually become an educator and like really just, you know, practice more sex education in the community and like have more queer studies and be able to teach people in the community that there is more to just this binary hetero world. You know, I'm sure there are I know so many people that are in the community that are either poly or queer, gay, trans, that can't even express it and have come to me specifically. Like, I've gotten DMs from people in the community saying like, I really just need someone to talk to. Like, I've seen your growth. Like, how do I become what you're doing? And I'm like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Like, I want to be that motivational person. I want to be that educator. Like, I really hope that one day we can change that.
That's fantastic. What a great vision.
I think it's really interesting the kind of like denial that can go on in small communities like that, where they think that like homosexuality doesn't exist, where it obviously does, but people are being repressed and they're totally like denying their true selves. I remember my father, who again is Catholic, he had hired some of the, because he lives in a small town near an Amish community, and he had hired some of the Amish men from that community to help him roof houses. And he said, you know, there are no gay people in their community. There are no trans or non-binary people in their community. And I was like, Dad, yes, there absolutely are. They just can't talk about it, or they have no concept of it. Yeah.
Like me, like I had no idea that like these really intense, you know, feelings for my best friends were actually crushes on these girls. And I look back and I'm like, oh my God, if only I knew what a lesbian or gay person was, like I would have been like, yeah, I'm fucking queer and I know it. Like, I didn't even have a label to put to my sexuality until I, you know, went on my first date with a girl and I was like 18 or 19 years old. And I was like, oh my God, I'm maybe bi. Like, I don't even know what other word, you know, it was gay, bi, or lesbian. I was like, okay, I'm bi. But like, you know, looking back, I'm like, there were so many things that were like clues to my sexuality that I had no idea at that time was like so fucking obvious. I just didn't know. I had no idea.
Right, right. Well, and when you are living inside such a sort of narrow, very restricted frame of reference, it's hard to figure out how to even think outside of the ways that you have been taught. And yeah, some people manage, but it's very difficult. And a lot of people, like, you just, until you hear the concept articulated, it's just outside of your ability to imagine.
Yeah, I'm so thankful for the internet. I'm so thankful for Google. I'm so thankful for, like, you know, books, like, and, you know, obviously the queer community that I've made, you know, and I've met people and I've come across people that are, you know, all of my friends are queer now. Like, every single one of my friends, they're like super queer. And it's just like, I'm so thankful for them. They teach me so much. And like, a lot of them don't even know that I come from an Orthodox Jewish background, because it's not something that I'm like, you know, going to talk about every single time I meet somebody. But, you know, I think that I just learned so much from, you know, the internet, from people. And I think it's so beautiful, because there's so many things that I'm still learning. And like, you know, who knows, tomorrow, tonight, I could learn something new and I'll be like, that's fucking cool, you know?
Yeah. How did you first connect with the queer community and or the trans and non-binary community? I mean, I think probably those things are somewhat interconnected.
Yeah. I think, I'm trying to think how, I think it was just like by meeting other queer people. Like, to be completely honest, when I was 18 years old, I downloaded Tinder, which is like a dating app. And I was like, I am gonna just swipe on like every gender. And like, you know, not even for dating purposes. I just wanted to meet other people, like friends, and go on dates and have a good time. And I met so many queer people through Tinder. And I think that that's really strange. Like, I think about it, I'm like, okay, like I'm on a dating app. Like, I was single. So like, I was okay. Like, I was like, okay, maybe I'll hook up with this person. But like, also I've met so many great queer friends from Tinder and also Instagram. Like, there's a great queer community on Instagram where I've met so many cool queer people from around the world, just like that I've had conversations with through my like direct messages. And just like, I've never really, like, I've definitely like researched like the LGBT center near me, like when I was in LA. I've never been to it though. Like, I wanted to, and I had like the intention of going to like a group therapy or like a support group for non-binary people. I never like ended up doing that. But I think that just like putting myself out there and like just by meeting people through the internet it's really just, that's how I've made my community, is like through Facebook, Instagram. And then also just like, now that I'm in Columbus, I mean, we're in a pandemic, but like, I've definitely had like safe interactions with other individuals who are queer just through meeting people through friends and my roommates and my partners as well.
You know, so I'm an old school internet person. And when I was first working on internet issues like a lifetime ago, that was really like how we talked about the potential of the internet, like connecting people in, you know, who wouldn't be able to connect with other people in their small towns or in their isolated communities or in different places. Like, how do you find the people that you have something in common with if they're not in your immediate physical proximity? And what an amazing, almost magical thing that is, that the internet can make available to people. So it just makes me so happy to hear you say all of that.
It's changed my life. I mean, my one of my partners makes fun of me because she's like every one of your friends will literally have a Tinder story with you because you've probably matched with all of them on Tinder. Like, she made me this pin and it's like, I met Ellis on Tinder, and she's like, you should sell these because like literally people would buy this. And I'm like, it's fucking true. Like, there's no shame. Like, I've literally met the coolest, absolute like queerest people on Tinder. And, you know, some of us have had romantic things and some of us have had just like platonic great friendships. And, you know, it's really magical. I love it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think before, the reason I asked what your exposure to like media and movies was because in my small-minded small town, the only exposure I had to queer lifestyles, alternative lifestyles, pretty much any of that, was through movies, TV shows, and sometimes books. But like, even that was pretty limited to what my local library had. So like, I learned a lot from, and this was before Instagram, right? Like, so I didn't have that community yet, but I learned a lot from just TV shows and movies of what there can be possibly, that kind of thing. But I can imagine being sheltered from that, you know, you don't even get the ability to see a gay couple on TV.
No, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a polyamorous couple on TV or movies. Like, honestly, if you want to email me some like recommendations for after this podcast of what to watch, like, I would love that, because I don't think I've ever seen poly relationships in the media. Like, I mean, I've read like books and stuff, but I've never seen any movies with poly relationships.
There are a handful out there. Yeah, I think I have a list actually, and maybe I'll compile that. Thank you. I'll write that down. List of poly-themed movies. Actually, if you have Netflix, there's a couple poly-themed shows on Netflix. Actually, above all of them, because some of them I was like, you know, it was okay. It was poly. It was an okay show. But Sense8.
Sense8. Okay.
Yeah, Sense8. I'm gonna leave this right in the episode because Sense8 is such a good show. It's a sci-fi show. It's made by the creators of The Matrix, but the creators of The Matrix are trans women, which is pretty awesome.
Yes, I love
Yeah.
The thing about Sense8 is that the first episode is a little intense and difficult. And I actually had heard all these people going on about how great it was. And I turned on the first episode and it really freaked me out and I couldn't watch anymore. And then like 2 years later, one of my partners was like, no, seriously, you have to watch this. And if you can get to the other side of the first episode, it actually turns into this beautiful queer and trans affirming program.
Hey, I'm
but the first episode is hard.
Yeah, and deeper into the show, it gets into some more poly territory as well, which I was so excited about. Because yes, it was very, very queer right off the bat, but it wasn't very poly until the end of the series, but it does get pretty poly. I think the first episode, I also, especially when beginning the show, I started with a kind of like hesitance of like, oh, is this just going to be another like sci-fi show, like whatever. And then there was like a lesbian sex scene kind of towards the middle of the first episode, and I was like, oh, what is this? I want to watch this. Oh my gosh, what's happening? Okay, so, and then I was hooked from then on out. So, but yeah, that's probably one of my top queer and somewhat poly shows that I recommend. Sense8, which is spelled Sense8.
Okay.
The number 8. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally leave that in.
Yeah, I'll leave that in as a recommendation because I want everyone to watch that. It's so good. One thing I actually was kind of wondering, do you think the restrictions that you grew up with and the repression therein like exacerbated mental health issues?
Oh, yes. Yes. Like you are on the dot with that one. I think that like a lot of the mental health issues that I deal with now and what I've dealt with like my whole life has to do with a lot of things that were community oriented and like the restrictions that were placed upon me and like forced down my throat in a way. And also just like trauma that I've been through that has to do with, you know, being an Orthodox Jew. Like I've been through a lot of sexual trauma, and I think that has a lot to do with the lack of sexual education that I had. So like it all intertwines and it all connects, because I feel like I deal with mental health issues, I deal with PTSD, I deal with BPD, like all of these things that I deal with on a day-to-day basis have to do with the traumas that I've been through. And the traumas I've been through have to do with my lack of awareness and education and, you know, people in that community crossing boundaries and doing things that are, you know, not okay. And then, you know, me coming forward and being rejected about it and, you know, it being, you know, on the low and like hush hush, you know, things mm-hmm. that like were really traumatic to me weren't taken seriously. And I think that that's a community thing. I think that that's an issue. You know, sexual assault is, you know, something that is not talked about. Like in high school, I never had sexual education and I never was talked about consent or what consent is. So I think that that led me to have a lot of, you know, non-consensual sex without even knowing that I was being, you know, assaulted or, you know, unfortunately taken advantage of. And I think that has, you know, it's all connected.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just one community. How often do we hear about that in the Catholic Church? Yeah.
Yeah. It,
everywhere, unfortunately. Yeah,
it's really unfortunate. And I think that, you know, that also drives me to pursue what I'm pursuing in school. Because, you know, if I can be a person who educates, you know, at least one person in this lifetime on, you know, consent and on sexual education and what it means to, you know, be in a healthy relationship, whether it's monogamous or not. Like, I think that that is something that I really just, you know, hope to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. I agree. I'm also a sexual educator. And one of my main like sticking points that I will die by, you know, like, is I want to teach people a good consent, because I just don't think that even people who weren't growing up in super restrictive communities, even if they like me were growing up on TVs and movies, consent is rarely good consent. It's maybe she did not say no, but yes. It's almost never she said yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm in a human sexuality class like right now this semester, and our module this week, it's all online, and this module is on consent. Like the whole week's material is all on consent. We have articles and, you know, lectures we have to watch on consent. And it's like, consent has to be present and enthusiastic, and not in a way where it's like enthusiastic where you think it's like, yes, I'm excited. It's like, no, like it has to be verbalized, and it has to be, you know, and it can be revoked at any time. Like, these are necessary things that every human being who is, you know, sexually active should be aware about.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, and actually we actually have classes at my work that are starting kids learning good consent very young, you know, toddlers, right? Like, not sexual consent, but like consent and good consent for touching. And yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, if you instill it young.
Yeah. Well, and as a parent, that's something that's really interesting to navigate, like, you know, how teaching your children to set boundaries with their grandparents, for example. Like, if the kid does not want to give grandpa a kiss, the kid doesn't have to give grandpa a kiss. And like, that's a difficult conversation sometimes to have, because it may be completely innocent intent, but it undermines that idea that you have bodily autonomy. And, you know, if you can learn that and really own that as a child, I think it really sets you up a lot better as an adult.
Yeah. And I didn't have that. I was never taught. I don't remember being taught, at least, like, about bodily autonomy, having, you know, consent, like, at all. So I think that really set me up for disaster and a lot of, you know, unfortunate situations and experiences, where now I'm like, you know, just having to like do a lot of therapy work and exposure therapy and deal with PTSD. And I think that that has a lot to do with the community I was raised in.
Well, and I think that just in general, all people socialized as female are led to believe that they shouldn't say no, that they're caregivers, that they are taking care of another person, even if that means sexually. And in, you know, and this is just culturally like widely accepted, but in a super gendered society, that's probably going to be amplified, you know. Yeah. You're not allowed to say no, even, like, or whatever, you know.
For sure.
Well, it's your job to take care of their feelings and not hurt their mm-hmm. feelings.
Yeah, I mean, it even goes back to like not even being able to say no to clear off the table after dinner. Like, girls do that after, you know, Friday night family dinner. Like, we are the ones to go into the kitchen and do the dishes. Like, and that is what has to happen. Like, you can't say no. Like, what are you doing at the table? Like, you're a quote unquote girl. Like, you should be doing that. And it's like, that's how I was raised. Like, that's what we did. And I think that plays a lot into, like, you know, having that feeling of like, oh, I need to take care of these people, whether it's sexually or not, like, you know, with past boyfriends or sexual partners, just like not having the opportunity to be like, no, I actually don't want this. Or, you know, them also, like, I would have a lot of sexual partners in the Orthodox community when I was younger, because those were the people that were around me. And I think that there was no consent being taught of like what consent is. So it's like the boys I was having sex with weren't aware that like if I was too drunk, like that is rape. Like, I don't think they knew that that was a thing. Like,
right.
So, you know, I'd be 18, 19 going to parties, and a lot of stuff would happen that's, you know, things that I've either blocked out or like had to work on to like not repress. And it's like, we both weren't aware, but like at the end of the day, it harmed me because I was the one who was the victim, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Teaching that consent culture and to everybody, you know, across genders is, mm-hmm. 100%. That's what it's going to take to make a difference.
Has any family like disowned you or shunned you or anything? Have you had negative interactions because of coming out to your family?
Definitely. I mean, I've been made fun of at the dinner table for my pronouns and like asserting my name change, because I wasn't always called Ellis. And I think that it's kind of triggering to talk about, because it's like these people are the people that are supposed to be the most supportive and loving and, you know, validating in my life. And I think that to get, you know, either made fun of or just full on disrespected, whether it's behind my back or to my face, like, I think that that says a lot about those people, and it hurts a lot. So yeah, I mean, I've never been disowned or like shunned per se, for being queer or being poly. But I've definitely been made fun of, like with the partners that I've had or brought into the house. When I was in a long distance relationship with Thomas, who's in Columbus, and when I was living in LA and I would have Georgie over, like, you know, my family would, you know, question that and be like, why is she always around? Like, you know, stuff like that. And like, just not always being so welcoming to the partners that I have.
Do you feel like you had to be put into kind of an ambassador role, like answering all their questions about queerness or poly or trans? Yeah. Sometimes I feel like we end up falling in there.
It's so much pressure, because it's like, if I don't have the answer all the time, like, then I feel like I need to have those answers. And like, sometimes I don't, and that's okay. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll ask questions that are like so out of the realm of like things that I can like even comprehend, like things that I wasn't even like aware of at the time, or questions that are too personal, that it's like none of their fucking business. It's like,
yeah. Well, and sometimes you just don't fucking feel like being the ambassador. I mean, mm-hmm.
it's not my job. Like, there's the internet and there's Google, and like,
right. There are books. Like, yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of poly folks, especially if they're the only person that their friend group or their family group or whatever, work coworkers, the only poly person they know, they end up being a poly ambassador. And you end up having to give so much information and relay so much information that, like, that shouldn't be our jobs.
Yeah.
But you know, like, that sometimes, I mean, and obviously it's all of our individual choices to be like, okay, I'm going to play this role and I'm going to answer all these questions because I want them to be educated, or it's not my fucking job, please use Google, you know, like, and both are fully valid.
Yeah. And I think that, like, sometimes I do enjoy being that ambassador to like certain people, like to my partners and to my mom. Like, when they ask me questions about certain things, I'm like, yeah, I really want to educate you on this topic. I enjoy talking about it. But then to like certain other people who I'm like, you know, I know that it's going to come with judgment, or I know it's going to come with like rejection. It's like, I don't want to be that ambassador, because you don't even want to hear it. So like, yeah. Why are you asking this question? You know?
Right.
Yeah. 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 It's a waste of energy on some people.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. So then I guess, do you have any advice for folks that are in similar situations as you?
Yeah, I think it really starts with just accepting yourself for who you are, and like not shaming or guilting yourself into feeling when you feel a certain way. I think that it's so important to like just not have those negative feelings when it comes to you know, your identity, whether it's like your sexual identity or your sexual orientation or your gender identity. Like, I think just really accepting who you are, because like that's who you are, and that's okay. There's no need to feel, you know, a negative way towards yourself, because I think that there's already so much hate outside of ourselves, like in the world. And I think that it just, we need to do a lot more self-love and self-care. And a part of that is self-acceptance. And I think like accepting yourself for who you are is, you know, just one of those things that you got to do when you're doing self-care. Cause you know, we are ultimately like stuck with ourselves for the rest of our lives. So it's like, you know, the things that we put in, that we say inside of our head, the thoughts that we say, the way that we talk to ourselves is really important. And I think like switching that narrative into a positive outlook and like a self-validating way, like whether it's like looking in the mirror every day and saying like, I am valid, like I am poly, and that is like, I don't know what kind of, you know, whatever you're dealing with, like, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and just say something positive towards yourself. You know, I think that you might not believe it at first, but I promise you, like, it will get to that point where you start believing yourself. And like, that's totally awesome.
It's a great practice.
Yeah.
I do that all the freaking time. I have post-its around my room where it's just like, you know, statements about, you know, validating myself, because I have such a negative narrative in my head sometimes. And it's like, you know, it really, really leads into my relationships too. Cause it's like, you know, if I'm always irritated and if I'm always on edge and I'm always saying negative things to myself in my head, it's like, it's not enjoyable to be around me when I'm like that. Like, mm-hmm. It really isn't. So, you know, it's really important to just like, you know, validate yourself no matter what.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a good ending point because that's really important.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for reaching out. I think this is a really interesting episode, and I hope that, you know, as podcasts are becoming a little bit more popular, I hope this is a resource that's available to people in your situation or in similar situations that they can listen to and be like, oh, I'm not alone. You know, that's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
And that is it from us at Polyamory Uncensored. We have been Lindsay Miller
and Katie Williams.
We'd like to thank podcast husband Rob for being our sound engineer.
And thank you, Lindsay, for editing this podcast so that we sound smart.
You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Polyamory Uncensored.
Contact us at polyamoryuncensored@gmail.com if you have a listener question or a comment.
And if you'd like to support us at all, you can send us a monthly contribution at anchor.fm/polyamoryuncensored and simply click on the Support This Podcast button.
If you'd like to support the podcast with a one-time contribution, we have set up a PayPal link to make it super easy. Thank you for your support in any amount at paypal.me/polyamoryuncensored.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode, and remember,
we love you. Bye.